serving up as much sex and violence as you can possibly handle. Carnal violence in the international market, better known in the United States as torso, which is a particularly nasty piece of work with, well, if you like nudity and you like good-looking people rolling around in bed, it's great. Then they start sawing the limbs off and things get a little out of hand.
Right.
Jello after 1974 really drops off. There is one very significant film that comes out that year, and it's got Dario Argento at the peak of his filmmaking powers and is considered by some to be the greatest giallo of all time.
Getting closer and closer to the most unnatural kind of death. Beyond shock.
What was that?
Beyond horror into total terror. Murder runs wild. Blood runs cold, deep red.
The conjecture is that an act of bloodshed was once committed in that house.
What was it?
I don't know.
Everywhere you look, everywhere you turn, death is running with you.
Now, Deep Red is notable because not only does it serve up all of the usual sort of giallo style and violence, but it's also genuinely terrifying in a lot of places. It is absolutely one of the scariest of Dario Argento's works. But it also marks the end. And just 4 years after Argento has begun this explosion of cinema, the giallo is falling well out of favor. The Italian and European audiences have decided that they like the police procedural element of things way more than they like all the blood and guts. So the Poliziotto films, which are crime procedurals, become hugely popular. In the United States, you've got films like the ongoing Dirty Harry series, films like Bullet, films like Walking Tall, which are about cops and are about murder investigations. They ultimately evolve into these films where you have the detective is the focus of the film, but the detective is battling a very, very clever killer.
Yeah.
And the killer may be leaving clues or doing whatever it is the killer is doing. You can think of movies like this that you've seen recently. You know, Clint Eastwood has been involved in tons and tons of these movies.
Right.
His Secret Service film, it follows that plot line. In the line of fire. Seven is another example of that kind of film, where it's clever killer versus the police.
Right.
And that grows out of the giallo tradition. The other things that are happening is, and perhaps the most important thing that happens, this is WMFO Medford. I'm going to mention that again. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the most important thing that happens to bring a conclusion to the great giallo era, the golden era of the giallo, is the return to a former type of horror. And horror always does this. A certain subgenre comes into favor. Everybody goes mad for it for a little while. And then it fades away, and an older form of horror always comes back. And that was 100% true by 1975.
There is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution without change, without passion, and without logic. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws. This is Universal's extraordinary motion picture version of Peter Benchley's best-selling novel, Jaws.
I just found out that a girl got killed here last week, and you knew it. You knew there was a shark out there. You knew it was dangerous, but you let people go swimming anyway.
It's all psychological. You yell barracuda. Everybody says, huh? What? You yell shark. We've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
Is it true that most people get attacked by sharks in 3 feet of water, about 10 feet from the beach?
Yeah.
What we are dealing with here is a perfect engine, an eating machine.
We're not only going to have to close the beach, we're going to have to hire somebody to kill the shark.
Bad fish. But I'll catch him and kill him.
Did you hear your father? Out of the water now!
This shark, swallow you whole.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
That's a 20-footer.
25. 3 tons of them.
He's coming straight for us. Don't screw it up now.
Don't wait for me. Now! Shoot!
None of man's fantasies of evil can compare with the reality of Jaws. Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, Jaws. See it before you go swimming.
Now, Jaws is not going to wear black gloves.
No, it's an animal.
Jaws is not going to be waving a razor around or killing people. And the thing about it is, after a few years of, you know, the basically the black-gloved killer, the boogeyman, reigning at the movie theater, people were looking for something new. And this is the same thing that happened when Psycho came out.
Yeah.
Prior to Psycho, everybody was watching all of this costumed gothic horror.
Right.
Prior to the costumed gothic horror, It was the 1950s, and we all know what the big movies were in the 1950s. It was Attack of the 50-Foot Women. It was them. It was Tarantula. It was all giant mutated monsters.
Yep.
Occasionally people, but primarily giant mutated animals. Kingdom of the Spiders.
Sure.
Things that was scaring everybody. So we go from that back to the costume drama. Then we go into the psychotic serial killer. And once we've had enough of people, what comes back?
You get your monsters.
The giant, the giant animals. And what will follow over the next several years is a series, mostly produced by Dino De Laurentiis of Italy, of giant animal movies. Mm-hmm. King Kong, Orca, The White Buffalo. Mm-hmm. You'll get Q thrown in there. So it's all like giant supernatural or oversized or legendary animals and not people that are killing everybody. Mm-hmm. The Giallo as such really doesn't exist anymore. Dario Argento made his last true Giallo in 2009 and made movies sporadically between 1974 and 2009. Mario Bava passed away in 1980. His son, Lamberto, who would apprentice with Dario Argento, chose to make a more action-oriented type of horror. And Lucio Fulci jumped around into a bunch of different genres, while the rest of the directors who were known for making giallo pretty much went on to stay within the realms of Italian cinema, primarily making polizettos, historical dramas, things of that nature. One thing that Jaws does borrow from the Italian tradition is to go out and hire the best composer you can possibly find to write you a winning soundtrack.
Oh, sure, yeah.
For the Italians, it was either Claudio Simonetti and Goblin, or it was Ennio Morricone.
Yeah.
Two legendary composers. And the music played a massive, massive role in the success of those films.
Yeah.
Some of the most suspenseful film music ever made. And when Steven Spielberg was sitting down to make Jaws, he'd clearly seen what the Italians were up to.
Yeah.
Because he chose a composer who could deliver an unforgettable theme. 855-915-9636. This is a special edition of The Big Picture tonight. Derek Gary, Chris Earle, we're talking about giallo. When we come back, I'm going to give you the greatest giallo ever made. It is a finite genre, so I can do that. And coming up at 9 o'clock tonight on Tell Mikey D is going to bring you everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. I got to go let them in the building right now. So we will be back right after this, here on WMFO Medford.
Hi, this is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is a special edition of The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you tonight, talking all about giallo. just in time for Halloween. And I am going to give you 10 movies. My 10 picks for the greatest giallo of all time. And we've already talked about one of those films coming in at number 10. And I will say that this is a definitive list because, as I mentioned before the break, no one really makes giallo anymore. Very sad. But it means that you're talking about a finite genre. So when you say these are the best giallo ever made, you can defend that because they're not coming out with new ones every other day. So coming in at number 10, this is the hugely, hugely influential Mario Bava film, the film that launched the Friday the 13th franchise. The Italians called it A Bay of Blood. You may know it as Twitch of the Death Nerve.
Coming or aren't you?
Shh, quiet. You'll wake the kids.
Myself with my penknife.
It has one of the highest body counts of any Italian horror movie. Some of its killings were lifted directly and used in Friday the 13th, Parts 1 and Part 2. If you haven't seen A Bay of Blood, it is absolutely worth checking out. Not a great example of the giallo genre, but certainly one of the most influential of the giallo films. And by the way, if you are so inclined, you can find that film in its entirety on YouTube. I don't know what the quality of that is. I haven't had a chance to look at it myself, but I do know it is out there. Number 9 is a film from Spain. And the Spanish did make some giallo. I put this on here because it is pure fun. This film is often misidentified as a slasher movie, even though it has all of the hallmarks of a giallo in it. It also claims to be taking place in Boston, even though it was shot entirely in Valencia. It had a pretty unique hook and some pretty extreme scenes from 1982. Director Jean-Pierre Simon gives us Pieces. You don't have to go to Texas for a chainsaw massacre. It's exactly what you think it is. Pieces. It stands out as one of the few giallo where the killer uses a chainsaw. But they were just trying to tick off as many exploitation boxes as they possibly could. It's good for its excess and for the fact that it does sort of loosely cleave to the giallo formula. It's got all of the elements. It's got a hapless witness assisting the police. It's got a black-gloved killer. It's got suspects who turn out not to be suspects. All kinds of fun. If you're looking for something different and goofy and fun, check it out. Don't take it seriously because it is not high art by giallo standards, but it is a good time. Number eight, Emilio Maraglia, 1972, gives us another take on the high fashion scene and murder in The Red Queen Kills Seven Times.
Now legend would have us believe that a year after her death, the Red Queen came back to life and committed seven murders.
Help me! Francis!
Why are you so afraid of the police?
Herbert and Francisco worked out a plan so the police wouldn't find out. Are you really convinced that the killer is Evelyn?
And you all saw this woman running away.
Now remember, she was wearing a cape, a red one.
You look as if you recognize that face. I found out how your sister Evelyn was murdered.
What do you want from me?
Hey, stop! A coach car! Stop!
As soon as I get the knife, I'll murder you. I'm going to murder my husband. You can't come back from the dead. You can keep Kitty for appearances and have me for entertainment. And if you keep me happy, I won't blow the whistle on you.
You wouldn't want to disappoint the poor inspector, would you?
Why are you so sure it couldn't have been Evelyn? Now, I'd like to know where you were at 1:30 this morning.
Red Queen is.
Thank you.
featuring both the lovely Barbara Boucher and the lovely Sybil Danning in a very early role. The Red Queen Kills Seven Times is an interesting giallo because it is, in some ways, very much still bound to the gothic horror tradition that preceded it. The film takes place partly in a high fashion house in Germany, but also partly in a decaying old castle that the family owns. And there is some intrigue surrounding the inheritance and all of this. So we have all those sort of classic gothic horror elements in here mixed in with the modern. It's also pretty gutsy of a film to tell you exactly how many murders you're going to see before you walk in the door. Coming in at number 7, Dario Argento. We're going to get several films from him on this list. His 1987 film Opera is at once his most stylistic and his most brutal.
Argento brings fear.
Don't leave me alone. I'm afraid.
Passion. Obsession.
I can take you whenever and wherever I want.
And murder to a perfect pitch. The Opera. The final note is a real killer.
This is rightfully considered to be the last of the great Dario Argento movies. Dario Argento dials up the sexual themes and the nudity in this film quite a bit. He also dials up the brutality and the masochism to an extreme. If you're thinking of seeing this film, here's I want you to put this image in your head and tell me if it's okay with you. If you can handle a young girl being tied up and forced to watch murders by having pins scotch taped beneath her eyes so that if she closes them or attempts to close them, her eyes will be torn apart, then this is a movie for you. If that seems a little bit too intense for you, well, maybe you want to check out some of the other Argento films on this list. Coming in at number 6 is, yes, more Dario Argento. This film has the distinction of having one of the greatest tracking shots in the history of cinema in it, as well as one of the greatest soundtracks of any giallo film from 1982, a film that infamously wound up as a late entry on the United Kingdom's Video Nasties list, Dario Argento's Tenebrae. Oh, this should be playing. Wait. I keep hitting the wrong button. I hate that.
Slimy. your books, Mr. Neal. The book deals with a murder committed with an old-fashioned open razor, right? This girl, too, was killed with a razor, and your book's pages stuffed into her mouth.
Can I ask you something? If someone is killed with a Smith & Wesson revolver, do you go and interview the president of Smith & Wesson?
Peter, you can't let me down now. We're within 2 days of making a deal. Please, stay just until Friday.
My life is in danger. There's no deal in the world worth risking my life for.
Not anxiety or fear, but freedom. You wrote those words, page 46. Freedom to strike again, Peter.
Listen, don't hang up. We have to talk.
You told me how, Peter Neal. You and me together. We've just begun.
Come on, hurry!
Oh, my head.
You'll be okay. Oh. We've got to get out of here. The guy has an axe.
Could it be somebody I know? I wish I'd never written that book.
You don't mean that.
I've made charts. I've tried building a plot the same way you have. I've tried to figure it out, but I just have this hunch that something is missing. Tiny piece of a jigsaw. Somebody who should be dead is alive, or somebody who should be alive is already dead.
Explain that.
You know, there's a sentence in a Conan Doyle book. When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth.
Too Hot for the United Kingdom in 1982, Dario Argento's Tenebrae. One of the interesting things about Argento is that he was famously progressive as a filmmaker. And many of his films have homosexual characters and homosexual themes incorporated into them. And he plays all of this straight. He's not exploiting any of that. He's creating opportunity and he's creating representation. One of the most notable things about this film is the presence of Eva Robbins, who was an early and well-known transgender actress, who appears as a central figure in the film in flashbacks in the killer's mind, and is basically, you know, given full opportunity to be who she is. It is a film that is well ahead of its time, decades ahead of its time in that regard, and also serves up one of the most brutal murders in all of Argento's films. If you've ever liked Argento at all and haven't seen Tenebrae, highly recommend it. Easy to come by on DVD. The Blu-rays of it tend to sell out very quickly. This is a personal favorite of a lot of Argento fans and one that is absolutely worth your time. 855-915-9636. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight, when On the Town with Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. When we come back, my top five giallo films of all time, films that you are going to want to add to your Halloween playlist, right after this, here on WMFO Medford.
Okay, gang, so chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So who's gonna do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Not from a giallo, but from one of the most famous giallo soundtrack producers, Claudio Simonetti, and Goblin, with their theme from Dawn of the Dead. Giallo-adjacent film, co-produced by Dario Argento, and another film that owes some influence to the Italian horror cinema of the 1970s. It is The Big Picture. I am Derek Gary, counting down the 10 best giallo films of all time. Coming in at number 5 is a film that we talked about quite a bit early on in the history of giallo at the start of the show tonight. This is from Mario Bava, 1964, Blood and Black Lace.
A house of high fashion, a dazzling whirl of elegance, of exotic, extravagant beauties. An adventurous journey into the devastating allure of the most sophisticated women and their intimate secrets.
Suddenly, these lace curtains ignite a drama that will lacerate your emotions. Blood and black lace. Who is this shrouded, sadistic, sordid fiend who maims and murders? Why this bloodthirsty orgy, this holocaust of lives? Blood and black lace in bleeding color. A shattering, shivering, shocking experience.
One of the amazing things about Blood and Black Lace is that it's made, as are the most of the other giallo films on this list, it's made by master filmmakers. It's made by actual cinematographers and actual lighting designers and people with tremendous experience making film. So Blood and Black Lace looks for all of the world like a Hollywood studio picture of the 1960s. But the things that you see happening in the film are nothing at all like what was happening in Hollywood studio pictures of the 1960s. And it gives it that sort of greater level of impact because you get a certain feeling of safety and familiarity as you start watching it, and then it goes off the rails, and then you know you're in for a thrilling treat. Coming in at number 4, Mario Bava's masterpiece of psychosexual terror, A Lizard in a Woman's Skin.
Among the annals of the abnormal, there is no more erotic a nightmare than the strange story of Lizard in a Woman's Skin.
By the way, Frank.
Hmm?
You're not being unfaithful to Carol, are you?
For you represents degradation and vice.
Jill, please. I'm going completely mad.
Oh,
Dura was murdered by the person she was blackmailing. Only she wasn't blackmailing your son-in-law.
Father, there's only one thing I can tell you. I didn't kill her.
She was standing there in front of me, in her fur coat. So, she takes it off. Not a bloody stitch off.
Mrs. Hammond, remember that anything you say will be taken down and may be given in evidence.
Unbearable suspense that keeps you on the edge of an abyss of terror.
American International was okay with that one. Big parts of this film really do play out like an acid trip. That's one of the film's charms. Another thing about the film is that it is very much, again, steeped in the sort of classical tradition of horror. And it brings in a little bit of politics to it, because the core of the story is about an old aristocratic family in Italy, dealing with their very modern, very liberated, very popular next-door neighbor. A situation that ultimately ends in murder and questions about who the murderer might be. You need to be able to deal with lots of nudity if you're going to watch this one. But it is one of the most stylish and one of the most captivating of the Giallo films. Coming in at number three is probably the most disturbing film on this list. This is a film that deals with the subject of teen prostitution and was also exists at the intersection between Giallo and the Poliziotteschi films that would become popular in the second half of the 1970s. Massimo Dallamano's What Have They Done to Your Daughters?
Your panties off. All right. Walk around. Yes. Yes, like that. Come over here. Sit here.
Who's this brutal?
What a load of fuss for a few hours in bed.
God. 15 or even less.
Sure, I know I'm still a child, but I'd rather not have a kid every 9 months.
If she's a runaway, sir, it'll turn up if the parents reported it. We're still checking.
This girl didn't commit suicide. She was killed, and I suggest you cooperate with us now.
Oh, come on now, let's get this straight. Am I free or have I broken some law?
Yes, you have broken some law, and no, you're not a free man.
Inspector Silvestri!
If the rules forbid me to say anything else or ask her anything else, how am I supposed to solve this case?
How dare you say the case is resolved? It's not so, and you might at least have discussed it.
I didn't want to involve you.
And I suppose Paglia's statement will come from his coffin.
You may have the kind of big names that we can't touch. He can't be touched without orders from the very highest authority. Never is what that means. As usual. Inspector, I think you still have a murderer to find. Our friend with the meat cleaver.
Cut you into little pieces like I cut off your friend. Just tell me where he hit him.
You want to use Giuliana Beegee?
Why? I'm Beegee.
You'll have to come with us.
What for, cop?
You'll find out. Come on.
Beegee!
Stelvio Capriani's soundtrack by itself makes this a film worth watching. But you have to ask yourself whether or not you are willing and able to handle the subject matter of this movie. This is a movie about a ring of underage prostitutes who are being groomed and preyed upon by elite members of Italian society. In that sense, it is an extremely political giallo, much more so than many of them were. And a further exploration of the disaffection of youth in the 1970s, who blamed the Italian elites and the Italian aristocracy for the horrors of World War II and for the oppression of the Italian people. This film is steeped very heavily in those politics and very heavily condemns the elites who are profiled as being the source of all evil and all corruption in Italy. It's also interesting in its transition from the giallo to the Polizio Tedeschi, because this film focuses very heavily on the police investigation. We don't really have that witness who is guiding us through the story. We see almost everything through the eyes of the detectives, and what they see and what they hear is profoundly unsettling. So those of you who are sensitive, those of you who really do not like to discuss the topics of rape and abuse and sexual exploitation, I suggest you give this one a wide berth. Those who are looking for a pivotal film that exists at a crucial intersection in the gritty, politically based, reality-driven cinema of the 1970s, this one is definitely worth a watch. Our last two of the greatest giallo films of all time are a little bit easier to take. Yes, this next one, once again, deals with child murder. It is, well, just a lot less disturbing overall than What Have They Done to Your Daughters? Yeah, maybe. Lucio Fulci, 1972, in one of the most daring films, and another one of the most political films in the entire giallo subgenre, Don't Torture a Duckling.
Someone's mouth, and he kills.
Who? Who does the killing?
Anybody. Man or woman. Who's a child of the devil?
I told you.
Superstitions.
I don't know.
Peppino, no one's ever been killed because of magic. No one. It's all nonsense.
Who's that?
Ah, she was born here. Her father made a fortune in the land.
Come on. I won't bite you. I'm coming.
Apparently, she was implicated in a drug scandal a few months ago. I don't know any of the details, but her father seemed to think she'd better stay here.
I wouldn't say she's your most devout parishioner.
I know. In fact, it's only since she arrived here that funny things have been going on.
What do you mean?
Nothing. It's just sometimes you get suspicious of everyone.
I'll break you!
Which would you prefer, a kiss or money?
If you want, I'll carry the child.
Don't Torture a Duckling is probably the most allegorical of all of the Jolly films that we have discussed, it's set in a very interesting location. It is a small village in the Italian countryside that is being encroached upon by the modern world. We start the film with children from this village playing around a superhighway and watching people come to the village via the superhighway. The village itself seems completely out of time and out of place. Folk traditions and superstition and belief in witches still guides the thinking of a lot of people. And into this environment, we have two additional presences. One is the Catholic Church, which obviously is fighting against all of these superstitions and belief in witches while trying to win the souls of the villagers. The other is a very compelling young woman played by Barbara Boucher, generally worth seeing anything that she's in because she is a great actress, very talented, very easy on the eyes as well. And a series of killings of young boys begins to take place in this village, which leads the villagers to conclude that a witch is loose, and the church to conclude that all of these beliefs in witchcraft and superstition need to be put to an end, and the police ultimately coming in and trying to calm the whole thing down before the villagers turn on each other and murder each other. The end of the film, we find out who the killer is and what the killer's motivations are. And I will say that for Lucio Fulci, a lifelong Catholic, to have made this film and put the ending on it that he did amounts to an act of high blasphemy at the time that the film was made in 1972, and certainly kept him from taking communion for several years after that. This is a film that is unflinching in its criticism of the different ways that spirituality is used to control and malign people. It is also a film that is unflinching in its criticism of the way that the modern world is erasing the traditional world and the simpler life that existed. There's a lot going on here, and what you have is one of the classical Italian directors, somebody who is steeped in deep film tradition, somebody who is well aware of the old aristocratic days and the simple life that existed prior to World War II, basically hungering for that and asking questions about which institutions were most responsible for its decline. All of those elements make this a film absolutely worth watching. There are some unbelievably brutal moments in here. If that's what you're into Giallo for, there are sexy moments here. If that's what you're into Giallo for, and there is a lot of political commentary that you will appreciate all the more if you understand what's happening in Europe and in Italy in the early 1970s. So I've been running through the top 10 giallos, my favorite giallos of all time, 10 that should be on your list to watch around Halloween. Number 10, Bay of Blood, Mario Bava, 1971, the film that inspired Friday the 13th. Number 9, Pieces, Jean-Piquet Simon, 1982 Spanish film, recommended only for those who like goofy horror with lots and lots of blood on screen. Number 8, The Red Queen Kills Seven Times by Emilio Maraglia from 1972. An interesting sort of giallo bookended by traditional gothic horror elements. Number 7, Dario Argento's Opera from 1987, one of his most brutal, but also one of his most stylish giallo films. Number 6, Dario Argento's Tenebrae from 1982, featuring the most extensive and technically complicated tracking shot put on film at that point in time, and some unbelievable murder set pieces. Number 5, Blood and Black Lace by Mario Bava from 1964, the film that in many ways began it all. Number 4, Lucio Fulci's A Lizard in a Woman's Skin from 1971. A good sort of psychedelic freak out with plenty of sexuality and some genuine questions asked about the tension between the old stuffy European aristocracy and the new wildly liberal and free youth. Number three, for those who can take it, What Have They Done to Your Daughters? A film that deeply looks into the exploitation of minors by the elite, by the aristocrats, and the limitations of the police in dealing with it. Number two, Lucio Fulci's multi-level political screed, Don't Torture a Duckling, which is pretty busy condemning everything in sight. Fulci was an angry man, and his anger shows in this more than anything else. That brings us to number one, the greatest giallo of all time. And it was a film we mentioned very early on in the show tonight, from Dario Argento, who really is the master of the giallo and the master of Italian horror. 1974's Profondo Rosso. This is a film that simply has all of the elements executed to the highest possible degree. The cinematography is spectacular. The sets are spectacular. The fashion is spectacular. The killings are spectacular. Everything comes together perfectly in this film. And those who know the film and know it well also know that within the first, oh, I would say 15 or 20 minutes, it tells you who the killer is if you know where to look.
Getting closer and closer to the most unnatural kind of death. Beyond shock.
What was that?
Beyond horror into total terror. Murder runs wild. Blood runs cold, deep red.
The conjecture is that an act of bloodshed was once committed in that house.
Did you hear that?
No, what was it?
I don't know.
Everywhere you look, everywhere you turn, death is running with you.
If you only ever see one giallo movie in your life, make it Dario Argento's Deep Red, also known as Profondo Rosso. You can see that film and pretty much understand everything that the genre is about. And if you only ever listen to one radio station, please make it WMFO Medford. We will be back next week with another edition of The Big Picture. Shea Spillane will be back, and because it's going to be Halloween night, we're going to be suspending the news once again and playing scary songs, telling scary stories, and sharing our favorite things about the Halloween season.